indeed an honor and a privilege to be standing here introducing our speaker. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik is first and foremost a teacher. He himself characterizes his occupation as that of a Malamed. He is my Rebbe, as well as the Rebbe of thousands of students of Gantry Yeshiva University, and who have heard him and learned from him in many settings. He's the Rebbe to the four groups that are represented here at today's Torah study: the RCA, Rabbinical Council of America, who look to his halakhic decisions as guides to their rabbinic functions; the Jewish educators, consisting of day schools, Yeshiva High School representatives, Talmud Torahs, and afternoon Hebrew schools, who learn from him not only content, but a pedagogic method of teaching Torah to students, and who are looking for him, to him for guidance in Jewish education. The third group is the Jewish communal workers, who need his interpretations of halakhic Judaism in order to reach and inspire Jewish youth. And the fourth group are the social work students who study his thoughts in our course in Jewish Social Philosophy at high school, are familiar with the Adam 1 and Adam 2 psychology, the conception of tshuva as a creative process, and who are thereby helped to develop for themselves a philosophy of social work practice. We have gathered here to Torah study with the Rav. His topic is teaching, helping, and leading. It is my distinct honor to present to you Rabbi Soloveitchik.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ringo. Matter of fact, I'm not going to speak about the topic. I'm going to teaching and helping and our nation. Am I son? And I thought with a little what I'm going to discuss today are elementary things. Actually, I'll deal with terminology, but in my opinion, halachic terminology is very important. And each term expresses an idea. And I'm going to deal with the terminology centered around Jewish holidays. And I'll try, to follow, the lead of the terminology and to analyze the very essence of Jewish holidays. It is a strange, what should I say, paper. When I sat down to write, I had something else in mind. But the baby who came into this world is a different one. But I believe that you'll follow me and that will help you, in understanding the Jewish philosophy of holidays. When we speak of festivals, we must distinguish between two terms. One term is Yom Kadosh, or the way people in their halachic lingo say Gedushat Hayom. The difference is that in Yom Kadosh is a Kadosh, an adjective. When you say Gedushat Hayom, is the Kedusha substantive. But this is one group of holidays which can be described as Yom Kadosh, or Yamin Kedoshim, or those who possess Kedushat Hayom. There is another group of holidays which we call, or we classify, as Yom Tov or Yomim Tovim. Those terms, that of Kedushat Hayom and that of Yom Tov, are of biblical origin. They are certainly of Talmudic origin as well. Kedushat Hayom, the whole concept of Kedushat Hayom, there are days which are endowed with holiness. Usually when we speak about days, I mean, we never think of something substantive, of something having a content, an essence, and what the philosophy is called essentia, substantia. To us, time is not something living. It's not a subject to which attributes can be ascribed and traits are actually predicated. To us, time is like, in the Kantian manner, is just, it is actually a mathematical concept, nothing else. I mean, now modern physics has combined time with space, so it is empty, as empty as space is. It is just one of the coordinate system. It's one coordinate of a system within which we try to explain the world, I mean, the cosmic dynamics. The Judaism time was something else, was some a living entity. Living entity, there was substance to time, there was individuality to time, there was essence to time, and you could ascribe attributes to time. The same manner as you do ascribe attributes to people. You say, nice person, good person, handsome person, a holy person, or an evil person. You can also speak of time. Holy time, holy day, an evil day, a sad day. We actually, as a matter of fact, in our colloquial, we use in all languages, even in English, in German, in any language, an evil day. But while, I mean, modern man thinks that an evil day means a day on which evil, somehow an evil event took place. When you had to say, it means the day itself is evil, the day itself is cursed. And the same applies to positive attributes. And when you say a holiday, it means the day itself is holy. Not a day on which man somehow experiences holiness. Now this is already rationalization. When we approach Yahadus, we should many times try to understand Yahadus in its own categories. Whether they appear fashionable to us or perhaps old-fashioned, it's completely irrelevant. We have to understand Yahadus in its unique, singular categories. And time in Yahadus is something substantive, something essential. It is individuality. I would even say it's a personality. It is not just a part of a coordinate, of a mathematical coordinate system. So hence, the pasuk says, "Vayvorech Elokim es Yom Hashvi'i, vayikadesh Eisei." God has blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. In Nehemiah we find that on Rosh Hashanah and Ezra recited the law and the people cried, so they are vii machshim b'orom, and the Levites tried to silence the people, that saying that it is forbidden to cry on Rosh Hashanah. But they describe the day, the character day, Ki Kodosh Hayom L'Adeneinu. The day is holy and dedicated to God. The term Yom Tov is also mentioned in the Bible, namely, where? Yom Tov, in the Bible, where? In Megillah, correct. In the Skol HaFesta. Eisimes Yom Abu Asa, Lechidesh Ador, Simcha Umishte V'Yom Tov. Of course, we in our halachic lingo use both terms continually. Sometimes we speak about Kedushas Hayom, sometimes we speak about Yom Tov. Quite often we don't discriminate between these two terms. Remarkable is one detail. While we apply the epithet of Yom Tov to all holidays, without any discrimination, we'll call Pesach Yom Tov, we'll call Shavuos Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah Yom Tov, even Yom Kippur we call Yom Tov. In Sukkot, we have never said about Shabbos that it's a Yom Tov. Never. Shabbos and Yom Tov, I mean, if it's two extremes, two poles, and men somehow swing like a pendulum between those two poles. But you have never found, you have never come across in our Halachic literature or in the Bible, I mean, or in any kind, in any commentary, that Shabbos be called in terms Yom Tov. Apparently, Shabbos is not Yom Tov. Why? But anyway, we have been dealing now with Kedushat Hayom, with Yomim Kedoshim. But for instance, Chanukah and Purim are Yomim Tovim, no doubt about it. Yet, they do not possess Kedushat Hayom. They are not Yomim Kedoshim. Concerning Purim, we have already pointed out the description of the day as Yom Tov is mentioned in the Megillah. As regards Chanukah, and of course, Chanukah is not mentioned in Kisra Kedesh. There is no Megillah Chanukah in Kisra Kedesh. So we have to simply refer to Megillah Tanit. Megillah Tanit, quoted by the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chaf Aleph, I believe, Amud Beis. The Braisa states, Rishona Abo, Osem Yom Tov, the Halel Ve'edoye, or the Simcha Ve'halel. So the name Yom Tov is applicable to Chanukah too. However, as he mentioned, they lack Kedushas Hayom. While Shabbos and Gimel Regolim or Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are Yomim Kedoshim, Chanukah and Purim are Yemei Chol. Now let me ask a simple question. What does Kedushas Hayom mean? What is it actually? Correct. When we say that today is holy, Ki Kodesh Hayom L'Adonenu, what does it mean in halachic terms? What Kedushas Hayom means at the very outset is simply Kedushas Hayom denotes or signifies an inner endowment, as I told you before. Or shall I say, it is now it has become a colloquial term, a charisma, enmeshed or hidden in the very substance or essence of the day. And this charisma, this inner quality, it's a mysterious quality, which is hidden in the very essence of the day, expresses itself halachically, as it was said before, in Issur Melacha, prohibition against work. Chanukah Purim do not precipitate Issur Melacha. Apparently, they lack that specific endowment which usually expresses itself и Ниса Малахи. Wherever there is no Issa Malache, one cannot speak of Gdusha Sayyid. The latter is inseparable from the idea of absolute rest, but not so much rest as absolute cessation or complete stoppage, discontinuation. How, I mean, all right, it's easy to say that the Kedushas Hayeim expresses itself in Issa Meloche. I mean, could somebody prove it by quoting a text? We say it in Birkas HaMozon, Ki yom ze godeil ve kodesh lishbos bei ve'lo nuach bei be'yahavo k'mitzvas chetzinecho. For this is a great and holy day dedicated lishbos bei to cessation or discontinuation and to rest. Of course, with love in accordance with thy will. The apparently the adjectives Godel the Kodesh are linked up, inseparably linked up with Shvisa and Menucha. And there is no doubt that Shvisa is by far a more important attribute of the day than Menucha. Living off and resting. And let's not forget that the term Gdusha quite often in the Bible has the connotation of separateness, of being separate. Or it has the meaning of being not common, or a meaning of uncommonness, singularity, distinctiveness. As a matter of fact, the term Kodesh also has the connotation of distance, of being remote, being far, far away. When we say Kadosh, 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 Avayet Svoe, Melech Oloretz Kvede. So you indicate this great paradox in our religious experience, that on one hand we experience God as remote, as distant, as abiding in infinity, in the recesses of transcendence, and on the other hand, God is my companion, right here. Kadosh, 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 remote, exalted, above and beyond everything, above and beyond the cosmos, the great, the unit, the boundless universe, and at the same time, Melech Olam Hatzedek, I mean, he fills out the universe, and he's right here, nearly. That's why in Chabad, the two terms, Memalei Kol Haolamim, the Sevis Kol Haolamim, are so important. So basically, Kedusha means many times distance, remoteness, being unreachable. Therefore, when we say Shabbosis V'yom Tevim, that has been set aside as days of rest and discontinuation or leaving off or cessation are not ordinary common days. Whoever possesses Kedusha is not, cannot be a common entity, cannot be a common person. There is something unique about it, something singular, something different. So if Shabbos is the Yom Tevim are endowed with Kedusha, it means they are endowed with uniqueness. They are many times remote from the ordinary way of life or from ordinary days. They are not ordinary. They are not common days. They are what I use the term, they are freaks. They are different. You know very well. Sometimes we may admire a freak, and sometimes he's very annoying. A freak can be very annoying. So Shabbos Yom Tov can be terribly annoying. annoying and interfering with our everyday conveniences. A little pleasure. It's exactly the, what shall I say? This reflects exactly Gdusha. Even jihadists as such is sometimes very annoying. And very unwelcome to the ordinary man. They're unusual, unusual days. What happens on that day? Nothing in particular. Just the workaday routine is interrupted on that day. What happens on that day? The established program of human activities. What is that program? What does that? Where is this program mentioned in the Bible? Human being has a certain routine, a certain program. This program has not changed. This program has not changed over the centuries and millennia. It's the same. The program, in my opinion, you will find, yes, correct, I believe, beautifully described in Bochen Afshin. Tizrach HaShemesh, HaShemesh Yisofun, Velmei Nosom Yerbotzum, Yeitze Odom Lifo'olei, V'lavidose Yadere. The sun rises, they slink away, the young lions, as they hide in their dens. Man goes forth unto his work and to his labor until the evening. That routine of Yizrach HaShemes, Yeitze Odom Lefo'olei, V'ladose Yadu'ares, and that monotony is discontinued if the Yom is not an ordinary day, but a Yim Gadol V'Kadosh, a great day and a holy day. Of course, even on a Yim Gadol V'Kadosh, the sun rises. The universe is not different. Certainly the young lions couch in their dens. And again, Gadol V'Kadosh. But man does not go forth unto his work or to his labor. No. Today, man has a different, a unique schedule. What the schedule is, we don't know. This distinctiveness, as far as the schedule is concerned, the change sanctifies and hallows the day and makes it a Yom Gadol V'Kadosh. Why is it a Yom Gadol V'Kadosh? Because it is a unique day. The question arises, what is the nature and the essence not of a Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, but of Yom Tov. That is the prize of Kedusha Sayyim. Chanukah and Purim are the prize of Kedusha Sayyim. They are stripped of Kedusha Sayyim. Meloch is Tamitzvah. On the one hand, the day of Chanukah or Purim, it does not differ from an ordinary way, from the ordinary day. On Chanukah Purim, man goes forth to his work and to his labor until the evening. On the other hand, man is called to act or to engage in specific action which the Halacha calls mitzvah sayim on those days. For instance, Purim, a man is obligated to recite the Megillah, and Chanukah to light the candles, to say Hallel, to abstain from Hesped V'Tani, from grief, from fasting, and public mourning. The conclusion is obvious. Even Chanukah and Purim are in doubt with some charisma, with some singular quality not to be found in an ordinary day. Of course, they are not human beings. Here they are, and this is my term. Human tovim, of course, but I would say human kvuim. They've been singled out, or human mufchorim. They've been selected out of 365 days. 8 days of Hanukkah and 1 or 2 days of Purim have been selected and set apart. And they are also different. There is somehow individuality. There is character to them. What is obvious? That they are not ordinary days. So if this be so, so the question arises, what is the difference between Yomim Gdeshim or Yomim Tovim, or rather not to, because to avoid confusion, I'll call it Yomim Kvuim or Yomim Ufchorim. What's the difference? Of course, the halachic answer is clear. Yomim Gdeshim are workless days. Yomim Kvuim are work days. Yet one asks, what is the root of this distinction? Well, apparently there's a different experience related to Yomim Gdeshim than the experience which is associated with Yomim Kvuim, like Hanukkah Purim. The answer that this, that Yomim Gdeshim are all midraise, of biblical origin, the Yomim Kvuim are of rabbinic origin, I mean, would not satisfy us. Let me give you the answer in one sentence, and then I'll elaborate this sentence. That's exactly what the paper is out to accomplish. The answer, I believe, is as follows. The idea of Yomim Gdeshim, or the charisma of Yomim Gdeshim, expresses itself in human, what shall I say, introspection or withdrawal. The experience of Yomim Gdeshim, of Yomim Kvuim, manifests itself in human openness and outer directedness. I'll elaborate that. Let me explain it. Wherever the Torah spoke of Shabbos, not only of Shabbos, of the three holidays as well, namely Kippur Golim, Rosh Hashanah, Purim, and Rosh Hashanah, namely Pesach, Shmuyas, and Regolim, as well as Rosh Hashanah. Wherever the Torah spoke of Shabbos or other holidays, it never failed to mention that the day, the charismatic, or holy day, not holiday, but the holy day is related and dedicated to the Lord, to the Almighty. The Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat L'Adishem Melekecho. Shesis Yom Tavik V'sisa Kol Melachtecho. The Yom HaShvi'i Shabbos L'Adishem Melekecho. The seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Chag HaSukkis Taseloch. Shivas Yomim Tochek L'Adishem Melekecho. The Feast of Sukkot. You'll observe the Feast of Sukkot. And you'll celebrate 7 days unto the Lord. Chag Shavuos, Taseh L'Adishem Melekecho. The Feast of Weeks, you'll celebrate unto the Lord. What does it mean? What does it mean? The word L'Adishem Melekecho. What do the words, the seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord, mean? What idea hides behind those strange, enigmatic words? Unto the Lord thy God. Should it would have been sufficient if he had said, Sheishis Yom Tavod V'sisa Kol Malach Techo V'yeim HaShvi'i Shabbat. The idea would have been conveyed to us, the 6 days are allowed to work, On the seventh day, we have to cease to work. I believe that those enigmatic words express an exalted idea in Yahadus. I would say it is the idea which was mentioned by the Yitzhak Chaim, the Ari, I mean, the founder of the Loyanic school in mysticism, and later developed and made the central idea of Chabad by the Tanya, by the founder of Chabad. The idea is what is known, whoever studied it, as Soda Tintum, the mystery of self-contraction, or the mystery of self-limitation, or the mystery of self-restriction, or the mystery of withdrawal and retreat. As a matter of fact, this mystery has stimulated also the controversy between Chassidim and Eslamim. If we consider this controversy from a philosophical viewpoint, what does this mystery of Tzimtzum say? I mean, let me explain it in very simple terms. The mystery of Tzimtzum says that creation of the world is a sacrificial act on the part of the Almighty. As if Kariochen, the Almighty has brought a sacrifice. He gave something up. Then he said, Yehi Eir, let there be light. Or by saying, Yehi Eir, the Almighty man, let there be a world. Before the universe came into existence, God was one, his name was one. By creating a world in general, and by creating men in particular, God had surrendered his aloneness of being alone, and his loneliness, again being alone, to the world. In order to create a world, he allowed finiteness, in this case a physical world, a physical universe, to share in his infinite being, in his infinite existence. He allowed somebody else, or something else, to share with him in what was exclusively his own. Prior to creation, there was only one infinite, all-inclusive, and all-encompassing, and all-embracing existence. God. There was nothing beside him. God had Kaviyochel to withdraw and to contract himself in order to permit a world that, in order to permit a world to be born out of nothingness. Yetzirah means an act of self-restricting on the part of infinity, and permitting finitude to exist beside infinity. Something which is nonsensical from the viewpoint of logic. From the viewpoint of logic, you all know that if you take an infinite number, you try to add a finite number to the infinite number, what will you get in some trouble? An infinite number. So basically, the whole existence of the world is an absurdity from one viewpoint. It's nonsensical. We don't exist. But how can finitude exist beside infinity? It's mathematically wrong. It's logically wrong. And this absurdity is responsible for our existence, that the world came into existence. This is the great mystery of Pinchum. I cannot develop it, I mean, fully. In accordance with the Lurianic doctrine, which was developed, I mean, later by the founder of Chabad. It is true that in particular, the creation of man in God's image was a sacrificial act on the part of Kodesh Baruch. The mere fact that he endowed man with Imago Dei, with the image, with his image, it is itself already an act of giving up. Because there is somebody who is divine. And he endowed man not only with the image, but he endowed both with great talent, with extraordinary capabilities, with numerous skills God bestowed upon him, honor and glory which belong exclusively to God. It's very interesting. Chassidim do it every Shabbos, but in my opinion it is more impressive. The custom of Misnagdim is by far more impressive. We say it only once a year. What I'm referring to. But there is v'amuno lechei elamim. Abino v'avrocho lechei elamim. Ahed v'ahodo lechei elamim. I mean, all those attributes actually still belong exclusively to God. But God in his generosity has bestowed some of the attributes on man. Man is a productive, indeed he is a creative being. God allowed man to consider himself master and lord of his environment. Peil shata tachas radlov. He put everything under his feet. God was generous with man. He even urged man to explore the universe. And he advised him to reach out even for the boundless and the fantastic. Even for that which is unreachable. And man, regretfully, many times is mistaken. He actually looks upon himself as if he were a creator, as if he indeed owned everything, himself and the world. What we call in Kabbalah the Nochash HaKadmeni, the serpent of old, or the ancient serpent. The ancient serpent of Genesis suggested to man that he may conquer the world and crown himself as God. God tolerates it. God does not take away man's skills, man's talent, man's capabilities, even though from time to time man misuses them. He becomes arrogant and also very foolish. On the Sabbath and on every Yom Gadol V'Kadosh, when a great day and a holy day arise, man is called upon to see, not to rest. Rest is the result. But he's called upon to see. What should he see? What activity? What activity should he see? To play the role of master and lord. To acknowledge that he possesses nothing, owes nothing, masters nothing, and he is nothing. That he is not in control, certainly that he is neither in control of the world, nor is he in control of himself. Or of his own talents and skills. Yom Kadosh is not so much a day of rest, of menucha. It is mainly a day of shvisa, of stopping, discontinuing, giving up. While menucha denotes rest, shvisa has the connotation of leaving off, of discontinuing. Something which one is accustomed to. What is this something? What is this something? No, this is already the, this is work. Why was work chosen as the means of man's humbling himself and admitting the truth and, so to say, and pleading guilty of arrogance, of false pretenses, of another exaggerated notion of himself? Why was work chosen by the Torah as the symbol of that basic change in man which should take place on the Yom Gadol V'Kadosh? For two reasons. Work basically is important for two reasons. Work is the source of human power and glory. No other creature is basically a working being, a working creature. No other creature is capable of constructing work. If the animal sometimes is busy, but whatever the animal does is not work in a philosophical sense. It is pushed by some mechanical instinct. There is no intention, there is no plan, and there is no productivity. There is no productivity. An animal doesn't produce. It certainly, there is no creativity. An animal doesn't create. Only man is a working being. I understand by that. A productive being. And through work, and only through work, man manifests his unlimited power. But chasreyu mi'at melekim. It's just a bit below the angels. The reason is because man has capacity for work. And then, for instance, the Greek mythology, and it spilled over into Greek philosophy, into Plato's ideal republic, considered work as a degrading occupation for men. On the contrary, they always dreamt of the golden age, or an existence which would not require work of men, because work was just good for slaves. Don't forget the Greeks had a slave society, but for the freemen, for the Hellen, for the Hellenistic race, work is degrading, it's below the dignity. Yahadus came out, the first one, that work is dignifying, redeeming, cleansing. Who works? Even Kaviyoko God. They call Melachti Asherasar. And if man wants to reach dignity, greatness, sweep, and depth, there is only one means which he can employ. This is work. In work, there's another aspect of work. Work is the cohesive force which unites individuals into a group. sociologically very important. Work is the most potent factor which pulls man out of his hideout, of his hiding, and merges individuals into communities. And it's a simple reason here. Everybody knows it. One cannot acquire all skills which are indispensable for the gratification of man's needs. And therefore, one must exchange one must exchange services with his contemporaries. The exchange of services brings about interdependence, an interaction which in turn leads to fraternization or to the coalescence of individuals into one entity. Call it community, call it society, call it state. I mean, the name is completely irrelevant. The constant trading and exchanging interweaves the individual into community and the isolated I into the texture of a together existence or an existence in community. In short, the role which work plays in promoting a together existence or a community existence is tremendous. If people didn't have to work, if people didn't work, they would never form a community or a state. They would never coalesce and unite into groups. Because each individual would feel happy in his isolation and in his place of hiding. There wouldn't have been, this magnetic force which pulls the individual toward the community. As a matter of fact, here Yadus again is in conflict with the philosophy of the Age of Reason. Philosophy of the Age of Reason adored the individual, did not understand the community. In explaining the community, they had to introduce a new concept, like the social contract, which is very artificial and very synthetic. Because to Rousseau, Montesquieu, Voltaire, all the philosophers of the Age of Reason, there was basically the individual is the great being, not the communities. That's why such a story, the story of Robinson Crusoe, was born during the Age of Reason. It couldn't have been born now with Marxism rampant and communism, expanding quickly, because in Marxism the individual means nothing, the community reigns supreme. The others has never agreed with this theory that the individual can get along all by himself, alone, on an island. The others was of the opinion that lonely man cannot meet the task that has been assigned to him by his creator. What task has been assigned to man by his creator? Leov do leshomro, to dress and to keep, to work and to cut and to cultivate. Working man, if man cannot afford to be idle, but he's got to be a working being, so he needs a helper. For a TV is out of Levade. SLAs are Canada. It's not good for men to be alone. I shall make a helper opposite him. In short, the working man is always what we call it in our lakhic literature in Rishus Arabim. He's on the highway. Manufacturing, trading, exchanging goods and services, talking, arguing, fighting, helping. But always be somebody. No wonder that Chava was created the very instant Adam was charged with the task of Lohov Dolishomro. He was placed in the Garden of Eden, charged with the task of Lohov Dolishomro, to be a working being, and also, and as a working being, he needed help. So Eve was created. No wonder, I see it every day, perhaps that's the reason that time's still active, that people who retire from business or from profession find out, and quite quickly, very fast, that they are unneeded, lonely, and that society abandoned them, including their own children, and that the world passes them by. Because if a man stops working, there is no need for him to maintain communication lines with the community, with the society. Somehow he expels himself. He expels himself. He excludes himself from the working community. If there is no work, there are no responsibilities, the communal ties, little by little, disappear, are broken. And on the Sabbath, God told man to stop working. What did he want to achieve by that? What was God out to achieve by telling men to stop working? He told men to cease to work, leave off in the middle, retreat, and rest. In other words, man is supposed, but I want you not to misunderstand me, on Shabbos to leave society. Men retreat, using a Buddha term, from the Tao existence, means I am Tao existence, into an I existence. We retreat from the Sabbath, this is the experience of the Sabbath, into privacy and aloneness. On the Sabbath, the individual gains supremacy over the community. He withdraws from conquest and acquisition, from work, and if he withdraws from conquest and acquisition and work, then he also withdraws from his co-workers and partners and associates. Into the mysterious abode of a lonely I existence. It's quite remarkable that in Bishalach, when Moses revealed on behalf of the Almighty the mystery of Shabbos to the people, so the slogan of Shabbos became, Al Yetzei Shvu Tachtachem, sit, stay in your places. Al Yetzei Ish Min Keimei Bayom HaShvi'i, no man go out of his place on the seventh day. No fraternization. No unitedness, I would say. No coalescence. Man is alone. And he should experience himself as a being alone. On the Sabbath, God tolerates no competition. He does not want to share man with anybody else, the society. Hence, he told men retreat from society. The latter has no claims on thee. The Yom HaShvi'i, now you understand the word, the Yom HaShvi'i Shabbat L'Adishem Rekecha. The seventh day is up to the Lord. The seventh day is the Sabbath unto thy God. Everything belongs to him. Cease to be a slave to thy work. Discontinue being a servant to society. Be exclusively mine. And Sabbath, the idea of Sabbath, is man's aloneness. If man is alone, he is with God. The Kedushas HaShabbat, the charisma of Shabbos, expresses itself in the return of man to God and to himself. In the severance of the individual from the working society, that's act of severing, hallows the day and renders it the Yom Godel V'Kodesh. Separation from society is ipso facto liberation from society. Man terminates his transient relations with his fellow man and establishes another relation which is permanent, communion with God. Don't ask me any questions about it. Of course, people do a lot of visiting on Shabbat. And the impression which is conveyed is if Shabbos were a day of socializing, of fraternizing, of being together. It's not true. Perhaps I'll explain to you later. But there is only one exception to the rule vegetarian made of men being alone on Shabbos. And that's as far as study is concerned. Study is concerned. Well, if I have time, I'll explain. However, let's continue. However, Judaism thought, here we come to the dialectical nature of Judaic approach. However, Judaism thought highly of existence in community as well. God is not only the father of the individual, Melechi Avraham, Melechi Yitzhak, Melechi Yaakov, but of the community as an entity. He's Melechi Israel as well. Judaism's approach to the problem of, millennia-old problem, which came up in the Greek, pre-Socratic Greek philosophy, the problem of individual versus community. Let me use a Talmudic phrase. Heiminai odi, which is to be prepared, an individual existence or a communal existence. The approach of Judaism was one of dialectics, a dialectical approach. Namely, Judaism has accepted, as in many other places, as in many other cases, accepted the thesis as well as the antithesis. Judaism says as following about this problem. On the one hand, if man is completely united with the community, holy in Rishus HaRabim, immersed in the concerns of the many, and not paying attention to his own needs, or to himself. I don't mean in a selfish manner, in an egotistic manner. He is liable to lose his very power, his very humanity, his original thrust and sensitivity, the fantastic resources of human creativity and I'm convinced about it, to be found not in public man, but in private man. Not in men's communion with others, but in man's communion with himself. The greatness, the genius in man is to be discovered in a monologue, not in the dialogue between man, between the I and the thou. The greatness is found in the philosophy, not in chit-chat. in his loneliness awareness and sense of singleness, being single. I don't mean single that much. I mean single that no one else is like me. This is basic. Chazal developed it. Kishim Shepard, Seyem Mishmanes, Kabe, Seyem Mishmanes. Chazal did not believe in doubles as far as the countenance is concerned, as the face is concerned. He also believed that man is, that each man, each individual is a freak, as is spiritual. Big approach, his own unique outlook on life, his own unique philosophy. If two people agree, it's because they compromise, they give up. Good for himself! There would be a bellum omnis contra omnis, as Hobbes said. The war of everybody against everybody. There is an element of checker, of untruth, in human agreement, in agreement with two individuals. This means carrying the theory of individualism to an extreme. But I'm convinced that the greatness of man is to be found in Rishus HaYochid. In the four cubits of his individualistic, lonely existence. The corporate state, the socialist or communist society, rise hard to level off the distinctiveness of the individual. By so trying, the Marxist or communist society destroys the very sensitivity and creativity of man. It's a fact. For instance, Russia was famous for its literature. Russian literature, actually, the 19th century, as perhaps was the most profound and the most sensitive literature. It transcended the French and certainly the Germans as far as the novel is concerned. Let's speak about poetry as far as the novel is concerned. It dried up. This literature dried up with the advent of communism in Russia. And don't tell me because the Russians don't allow even the books which were printed, I mean, published in the abroad, outside of Russia, are not great artistic works. I mean, one got the Nobel Prize for it. It was purely for political reasons. The Kremlin was right as far as the Nobel Prize was concerned. Couldn't compare that with Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, or Turgenev. I mean, you couldn't compare. There's no sweep. There is no depth to it. It lacks the mysterious quality on him, which Russian literature has. Because the corporate state cannot produce sensitive souls. Of course, you pay the toll of the road. The artist is the first one to pay the toll of the road. Then comes the scientist. But the artist in the corporate state pays the toll of the road. Not because the state is not liberal enough. Simply, the resources of creativity dry up. You are to be found only in an individual who rebels against society, individual who has the guts to say to society what he thinks, an individual who is introspective, an individual who tries to find out who he is. And since the mere question, who am I, is forbidden in Russia, it's heresy, so if you don't answer the question, who am I? So there is no need for literature. Because all literature is concerned with one question. Since Homer and, what shall I say, is about what the human being is, who he is, and particularly who am I, and what do I stand for? Mm-hmm.
Jihadist, encouraged man to rebel quite often against society, to act like an individual, and to be different and unique. No one who didn't study halacha properly has any idea, can imagine, how much freedom the halachic scholar has in interpreting halacha, in so-called chidushim, in being creative in the halachic field. Yehadus has encouraged. I mean, the famous story of Rabbi Lezer, he was in controversy with his colleagues, and they stood up, and they counted and accepted, I mean, the opinion of the majority. And then, I mean, there was intervention on part of the Almighty in favor of Rabbi Lezer, and he did not accept this intervention. Shows how much freedom the halachic scholar has. Of course, if he's a scholar, I want you to know. Those who claim freedom and say the halacha is not free are not scholars. This is the trouble. But a scholar enjoys unlimited freedom because the individual is the creative agent in halacha as well in many other fields. And that's why you cannot limit his freedom, I mean, his authority to express opinions, I mean, the way he understands. God created just one man, Adam. He concluded his covenant just with one individual, Abraham. The first Redeemer was a lonely individual, Moses. And very strange and wild the tablets given to the entire community the first time, they were quickly shattered. The second Luchot, the second tablet, entrusted to Moses alone as an individual, no one could accompany Moses up the mount, are still existent. And we still are committed to them. That means the others understood very well the greatness of the individual. And in order to be creative, he should not be completely enmeshed in society. On the other hand, you had to say complete immersion in oneself leads to serious emotional problems. I'm not a psychiatrist, so I can't tell you what kind of problems there are. I know, Joe, there are problems. And egocentricity is not only immoral, but also a personalistic anomaly. That's why to say the individual reigns supreme is impossible. This was the thesis. Now I'm trying to develop the antithesis. Moreover, the basic virtues, which are at the apex of our ethical hierarchy, like compassion, love, sharing in one's travail and distress, those basic virtues derived from the Midas HaChesed, from Chesed, will lose their significance should the individual live in isolation. Robinson Crusoe could not practice compassion. He had no one to sympathize with. He could not love anybody. He could love only one person, himself. How can the individual who withdrew from society experience compassion and love for his fellow man? How can the individual love his fellow man if he's emotionally remote from him? And such an individual is portrayed in the Bible. Well, some individual was punished, and then he learned how to live in community. He was restored to his own glory, to his previous glory. Who? Job. Yes, well, what kind of a fellow was Job? Chazal were never sure about him. It's a very elusive character, Job. Chazal were not too sure. They didn't even know when he existed, when he lived. One said he lived during the time of Abraham. Another one said during the time of Moses. Another one said he lived during the time of David. The fourth one said he lived during the time of Mordechai and Esther. Anyway, I don't know when he lived. But he didn't leave any marks. He disappeared tracelessly, Job. And he did not. When Abraham was engaged in a struggle, Chazal speak about Abraham as the only person. The whole world on one side of the river, and he on the other side of the river. It's quite characteristic of Israel's narrow. Yeah. But anyway, Abraham could use, the help and assistance of such a powerful man as Job. Did Job help him? No, not at all. He was not concerned. The same Moses could have used him too. According to one interpretation, he was a member of the inner council of the chicken cabinet, of the kitchen cabinet of the... The kitchen cabinet. Of that California cabinet, you see, which has decided the destiny of the Jew in Mitzrayim. Korabina Yileda Yerotashlechu. What he did, Bilam, what they advocated, the devil, he recommended Korabina Yileda Yerotashlechu. Yisrael opposed this opinion. It's a little too primitive. The point is, you don't do such things. You don't murder people. At least Israel has a more sensitive conscience than the statesmen of today. Well, let murderers kill 35, 36 people and then go for you. It has never happened not in our history, but in the history of the world. Yes. And what did the Eve do? Job, Shosa, the God. Then he was the Mordechai Esther, Bishushan Abiyah. He could have protested against such an edict that was issued by Haman. Horrible, habits for Yudim and Arab Zokin Tavanashim in Echo, Mephrasor of Esado. Why? For what? Did he protest? No. He was an individualist. What did he do? With what was he concerned? How did he spend his life? What troubled his mind? Whom did he love? He loved somebody, himself and his family. And the Apostle tells us in the most beautiful manner. And it was so when the days of their feasting were gone every week, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burning offerings, according to the number of them all. That means it is seven. Beyond the number seven, no one else existed for Job. A Jewish people didn't exist. He forgot about it. That's why he met with disaster. It is quite characteristic that when God rewarded Job and gave him everything back, he stipulated one condition. Job will find everything he lost. In fact, he'll get twice as much. Provided he'll do just one thing. Bilat Ashuchi and Eliphaz Atemoni and Tzifa and Amosi were in trouble because they did not handle Job properly. And God said that you forgive their sins, provided Job will pray for them. But Job has never prayed for anyone else, but for himself and his children. How can Job pray for somebody else? Well, he could perhaps come to Shul HaShabbos and make him Shabbach. The way we do sometimes. Yeah, but a Mishabbach was not enough. And God said, the is powered at him. He meant real tefillah, genuine prayer, genuine intercession. But this was a conditio sine qua non. And apparently Job rose to great heights after he met with disaster. And he found himself in that love. And in that concern for others. And in that dedication. That he indeed prayed for them. And the pasuk tells us. And this is the whole moral of the book of Job. And the Lord changed the fortune of Job. When he prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much. A single existence is quite often very dangerous. It may lead to the disaster of Job. It led to disaster, the single existence of the American Jewish community during the Holocaust period. We are also concerned with ourselves. We are not concerned with the world, certainly not with our brethren, with our fellow Jews. And we let millions of Jews go down the drain. Somebody told me, and he's right, that to the list of our chet, of the chatoim, we enumerate on Yom Kippur, we should add another al chet. Perhaps it would be the most horrible one. Al chet shechotonu lefanech. Beroyinu tzoras nafshesayim shalachinu. Rachayna bis Yisrael, shishchanenu aleinu v'leishamanu. I raise the question because I don't want to say it. I'm afraid we are about to confront the world again. Not, you know what I mean. We are isolated, completely alone. The whole world is against us, be it because of the shortage of oil, be it because man is even unreliable, Kolodom Kiziv, I don't know. But to be frank, I can't understand them, and the leaders of the world today. And they're going to sell out, I'm afraid so. I'm not an alarmist by nature. But if they're going to sell out, it will be a problem for the American Jews, how to act. And I don't recommend any course of action. I don't know yet what's going to happen. But I believe that every American Jew should have this possibility in mind. How will they act? Like Job? Before he met this disaster? We are safe here. A star, of course, as far as human beings are concerned, you can never say safe in absolute terms, you understand? But shall we, will we support? I don't mean support to give some money, but it's more than that is involved. I don't know, I don't advise, I don't suggest, I don't give. I'm just reminding you. It's the problem. Judaism, on the one hand, understood the greatness of the existential experience of man alone. It's important to be an individual. And I told you, man is creative because he is an individual, because he is different, because he can be alone. He can live in the recesses of his personality, unknown to others. And on the other hand, Judaism also understood the greatness of the community, of the existential experience of living in the community or with the community. And Yahadu said, the thesis plus the antithesis are correct. Individually, the Jew must be capable of being alone and at the same time being together. Of withdrawing from society, escaping from society, from the noise of the street, from the vulgarity, from the coarseness of society, from the artificiality of society, and also must be capable to come back and join society and merge in society and be one in society. The Jew should experience existence as a together affair, as well as an only I affair. The Jew should know the art of being concerned only with himself, and also at the same time of being concerned with all, with the community. The individual is both a separate existential entity who cannot imagine existence outside of himself. Let me be, you know, when man gets older, he begins to think in very strange, peculiar terms. Once I can imagine many things, I cannot imagine one thing. And this is because I am an individual. For the world, how is it possible for the world? Will it be possible for the world to go on existing after I have begun? I cannot imagine that. I can't imagine it. There is a short story written by a Nostrian writer. Peter Altenberg was a Jew, simulated Jew. He was at the turn of the century. He fought against Herzl also lived in Vienna. He was the correspondent, the Parisian correspondent for the Allgemeine Freie Presse. Yeah. So there is a short story, a short story, written by Altenberg. It's called New Year, 1951 or 1941. Anyway, so he describes the New Year Eve. The streets are blanketed with snow, and everybody is rushing, and the music plays in the restaurant. He gives it, was a very sensitive man. He gives a portrayal of New Year's Eve as a Viennese. I mean, you have to be a Vienna now to understand what it means. You understand? As a Viennese, all the dancers and the poisit noia, I mean, and kissing each other and embracing each other. And then there's the last line. The same New Year's Eve as I celebrated in 1903. What is the difference? There's one difference only. Peter Altenberg will not be around in 1951 New Year's. It means he couldn't imagine. How could the New Year's Eve take place without him? And this is typical, I mean, at least of us, many individuals. We don't think in such terms, but from time to time, thoughts are converge upon us. Converge. And I, of course, I don't think in terms of New Year's Eve. I think New Year's Eve is, the experience of New Year's Eve is not a part of my, let's say, fond memories. I was once beaten up on New Year's Eve. In Germany, I mean, Germany, said Germany, beer German. Let me eat. Prosit New Year. And he beat me up. It was 1933 or 32. Anyway, so, but I think many times, you know, when such thoughts come up on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, I think of another Rosh Hashanah in the future, and I see all the smells in the smells, and the same routine going through the routine, and the chants of the chazan, and the typical melodies, all the call, kukil, the kotche, and the shatir, says Rasenu, everything as it was. But there's only one difference, I won't be there. And this is a tragic experience. The individual cannot imagine the world without him being around, being a part of it. And this is basically, it's a tragic experience, but it is a creative experience. It's an inspiring experience. I can't explain it to you. But it's inspiring, and it is rooted in the individuality and exclusiveness of the human being. And that's why when we recite Zichronot al Rosh Hashanah, we speak Ve'lamdin Baal Amdin is Be'yomer Eizel Acher Eizel Rov Uvri is Be'yipokedo. The community as well as the individual are judged by the Almighty. He looks upon the single person as a part of a collective, as well as a closed-up being, as an open being. In steady communion with the community, with the society, and on the other hand, as a closed-up being, separate, abiding in the shadows of community. The same dialectical method, and I want to emphasize that, is applicable to the relationship between the covenantal community, the Jew, and humanity. What's our relationship to mankind? Are we a part or aren't we a part of mankind? Anti-Semites now say no. The Jew is not part of mankind. This is the main child anti-Semitic story now, which has been circulating for quite a number of years. The Jew is very clannish. He's only concerned with himself. Proof? When the war broke out in Kippur, the Jewish community raised $1 billion in a few days. But did the Jew raise money for Vietnam? Was the Jew concerned with the war in Vietnam? Or was the Jew concerned with the drought-stricken, Africa? It's clannish, it's selfish. Not as an individual, as a group they are selfish. They are group selfish. There is group selfishness. Let's ask ourselves, are we a part or aren't we a part? We are part of mankind because all diseases which attack a non-Jew can be attack the Jew as well. Yes, the same therapy. But experientially, spiritually. Do you belong or don't you belong? I believe the answer lies already in the dialectical method we introduced with regard to the old controversy. What's the relationship between the individual and community? The individual belongs to the community and doesn't belong. He retreats, withdraws from the community, and then he joins the community. The same is true of the covenantal community versus universal community. The covenantal community is also just an individual. An individuality. We certainly share the concerns of man in general because we face the same problems such as disease, famine, injustice, etc. But at the same time, we are also concerned, or we are concerned, with ourselves. We have interests and concerns of our own. And one is not supposed to drop our concerns, our individual concerns, because so many men said that the Jew is egotistic. Again, we are part of humanity. At the same time, we are alone for ourselves. Hence, Judaism has another method by which it sets up a festival and by which it invests or it endows this festival with meaningfulness. It paradoxical is the fact that the Yom Kavua, they called Hanukkah Purim, the Yom Kavua, there is no Kedushas Hayom in those days, but the Yom Kavua, there is something specific, something unique, something singular to the day, that the fact that the Yom Kavua represents philosophically the antithesis of the Sabbath idea. The latter, the Sabbath idea, stresses human liberation from society, human withdrawal from society, a movement of recoil away from society, into one's individuality, into one's home, private home. And Sabbath characterizes his representative of complete immersion of the individual in himself and consequently in the Almighty as a lonely being. Yom Kippur emphasized the opposite motif. What does Yom Tov mean? Yom Kodosh, semantically, simply if we'll take Hebrew semantics, means what? The holiday, what more? I said what holiness stands for in Hebrew. A separate day, an isolated day, a unique day, a singular day. It means the day on which the individual reaches out for singularity, not for universality. For uniqueness, for aloneness, from being different, from being like, not like others. A day of self-immersion. I mean, self-introspection. In a directness, if I want to use a colloquial term. The day of being alone. This is Kedusha. Kedusha means being alone. Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh. Being remote. What does Yom Tov mean? What is Yom Tov? What does it mean semantically? Translation is English. What does it mean, Yom Tov? What does Yom Tov mean? Might be, Tov in Hebrew has actually two connotations. Tov might be pleasant. Pleasant. We just read last Shabbos. Teva Samara. Doesn't mean the cows were kind. But Teva Samara means the appearance was pleasing. The appearance was pleasing. Fine. And then there is, Tov means kindness. Whatever, I don't care. Yom Tov means a day of kindness, a kind day or a pleasant day. But pleasant and kindness can only be imagined to within society. No one, man in isolation, cannot be pleasant. Pleasant to whom? Men, nor can man in isolation be kind. Kind to whom? Robinson Crusoe could not be kind, nor could he be pleasant. The Torah describes a certain relationship. I am pleasant in my relationship to other, but I cannot be pleasant to myself. Yom Tov, when we say, represents the opposite idea of self. It's a day of commonness, of mutual participation, a day of tearing down all fences, of erasing all boundaries, of leveling off all distinctiveness, separating man from man. It's a day of sharing. Not the individual, but the community is the hero of the day. The merger of the individual with the community. And shatters the individual withdraws from the community. And a Yom Tov, a Yom Kavua, the individual unites with the community. And Purim Hanukkah, there is no Yisom Aloche, because Yisom Aloche represents a different idea of myself. However, there is a precept of Simcha V'Halal. While Yisom Aloche represents the isolation of the individual, as I explained before, Simcha V'Halal is indicative of the union of individual and community. There is no simcha halachically unless there is sharing. Whenever you say simcha halachically, it means you rejoice, but gladden the hearts of others as well. Make others rejoice. There cannot be halachically, I'm not speaking now in terms of homiletical terms. I'm speaking in pure halachic terms. There is no simcha unless many are involved. And if, for instance, something happens which makes me happy, then why should someone else be happy? So I have to try my best to involve the someone, the Tao, in my happiness, in my joy. And I believe, and I spoke last time here, this is a tradition as old as our mother's soul. The one who initiated that tradition, that Simcha and Shering are synonymous or identical with Sarah. When she received the greatest gift, Isaac. So said Tzchikos from Yerikim, God did not make me laugh, made me rejoice. In Hebrew, Yitzchok means sometimes laughing, and Tzachik means also rejoicing. God made me rejoice. He bestowed upon me the most beautiful, the most precious gift. But I can only rejoice if Kol Hashemei Yitzchak Li. That whoever will hear the good news will rejoice with me. Otherwise, there is no joy. Interesting is that the Gemara made cotton called Simcha, Simcha the Rabbin. Any kind of joy must be shared by the multitude. There is no Simcha unless there is sharing, unless one's existence becomes suddenly unbounded, open, and all-embracing. The Bible never fails to mention, whenever it speaks of Simcha, that one has to share his blessings with somebody else. Ato vincho v'techo, v'abtocho v'amesecho, v'agei rasha b'sharecho. Kein lechelech v'nach v'imoch. Make him rejoice. The Megillah urges the people to celebrate Purim by feasting and sending gifts to acquaintances, and particularly and presents to the poor. And Hanukkah is not a sharing, but a sharing on Purim. It's a day of sharing. As a matter of fact, the whole institution of Tzedakah on Purim differs from the universal institution of Tzedakah the rest of the year. There are basic differences. For instance, you are social workers. There are many social workers here. You know that mother and charity cannot be given just anyone who asks for help. You investigate. Of course, in certain respects, we agree with the modern theory that you before you give. However, I'm pulling, there's no investigation. For a patient, yard, whoever stretches out his hand should be given. But it's a different kind, because the day, the essence of the day expresses itself in sharing. Hanukkah is not sharing of material goods, but there is sharing of halil, or of sharing in the joy of the nest. The Hanukkah is always kindled in the doorway, not inside of the house. No, we don't kindle the Hanukkah in the doorway, so you do it, we light it on the windowsill. The Hanukkah has got to be seen. If I raise the Hanukkah above 20 amis, my action is worthless. Well, because Simcha v'Halel can only be achieved if man is ready to share whatever he has. And particularly, Hanukkah and Purim actually represent one idea. I told you the idea of the community, the individual within the community, not outside the community. And particularly, it represents what? Common destiny. If the individual is in the community, then he experiences common destiny. Individual community is not only metaphysical existential term, it's a historical term. When the individual is immersed in the community, then he knows that he is no exception to the rule. If the community can suffer, so he also. He is not like Job, who thought the whole world is exposed, vulnerable. But my children are not vulnerable, because every Sunday morning I get up and I bring 7 burnt offerings, and they'll be protected no matter what will happen to the world or to the community. But it isn't so. Suddenly a tornado was unleashed, and the tornado has destroyed many homes, and among the many homes which were destroyed by the tornado, in a funny way, Job's home was among them. So, Hanukkah Purim Nayim Kavua is the Rishus HaRabim reign supreme, and Shabbos the Rishus HaYochid. The common destiny of all is the motto of the Yom Kavua. The individual is not hated. The single Jew is not hated. The community is the target of hatred. But you cannot hate the community, so you select the single Jew. The community is the target of hostility and persecution. The individual cannot escape the destiny. And likewise, salvation, when it comes, it includes many. It's very seldom when salvation comes just to one individual. And if it does come, you should right away share in his happiness with others. It's a Yom Kippur. There is no Yisra Menorah, on the contrary. Work is a symbol of cooperation. There is Matonis Levienim, Bisamachto, Ato, Fu. There is a Vovam Chaber. You and. That is the symbol of Hanukkah importance. Possibilities concerning God-man's relationship within the realm of history. It is almost taken for granted that God uses man from time to time as an instrument in order to execute or to fulfill his inscrutable will. There are actually, not two relationships in God and man, but three relationships. God does not use man as the fulfiller or executor of God's inscrutable will at all. Sometimes God acts all by himself. All by himself. God does not use man as the fulfiller and executor of God's inscrutable will. God does everything by himself. God himself decrees and fulfills his own decree. Man's role in such cases, in such situations, equals zero. Man is not being assigned any role. In certain cases, man is not assigned any role. The initiative is God, and the realization is his as well. All man can do in such a case is to watch, to admire, and to adore. What case is it? Of course, there was no man at all. Creation. tradition which is celebrated on the Sabbath is an act which was completely planned, devised, and executed by the Almighty. There was no man. Man was created on Friday. As the final being, actually, the final product. And Chazal asked, why on Friday, why wasn't man created on the first day? So because man, if men were created on the first day, he would claim partnership. He would say that he was a co-creator with the Almighty. But anyway, creation is... Man was not involved in creation. God is the creator and sustainer of the cosmos. Man is no share, no part. God, there's another case. God uses man not for consummation and execution of his will, but for heralding the message. Man is used as a prophet. He is not involved in God's action, but he carries God's word. He brings the good tidings to the people for whose sake God engages in action. He tells the people, the downtrodden and the unfortunate ones, to be liberated by God, that God is about to execute them in his promise. But he himself does not participate in divine action. He's not a partner. Man acts as the shaliach, as the messenger, or angel of God. He carries the instructions. This role was assigned to him. This was the role of Moses. He was the Navi. But the drama, he did not act. He was not the actor on the historical stage. The drama was fully realized by the Almighty. And that's the reason that on the night of Pesach, we say, Lei al de Maloch, Lei al de Shaliach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mechvei Leratzon. Whom are you going to... Whom do we exclude from the whole drama, Moshe? You know very well, Moshe's name is not mentioned on the night of Pesach. Not mentioned, not even once. Sometimes parenthetically in certain texts, but it's just parenthetically. It's absolutely his role, because his role was not a co-actor with God, but as the prophet of God, to bring the message of redemption to the people. First, there is a third relationship. This is the most difficult relationship. God lets man take the initiative. Man plans the struggle. Man fights for freedom. Man engages in action. Whenever man engages in action, the latter is costly and difficult. And man, and if God tells man to engage in action, so the action is a very difficult, as I said, and costly. And God wants man to bring sacrifices. God wants man to play his part seriously. As if the final outcome depended upon man exclusively. Man is allegedly the central figure. Of course, God determines the destiny and lets man either go under in defeat or emerge victorious, but ever man is responsible for that. The struggle cannot be won without human total involvement. In such cases, God demands from man heroic action. And heroic action means sacrificial action. far as Yetzias Mitzrayim is concerned, Menu was not involved in the event. Menu was informed and carried out some assignments on behalf of the Almighty. Yet he did not precipitate the events. He had no share in planning and executing. Therefore, we proclaim at the Seder, Lani v'le'achel. That's it. Now we know why Shabbat and Yom Tovim, prohibition against work, was decreed. And the Hanukkah poem, work is permitted, and man has to celebrate a day by sharing, not by withdrawing. Correct?
Yes.
Because Shabbos, particularly Shabbos, and also holidays. Holidays are memorial to Yetzias Mitzrayim. All holidays are memorial to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Man had no share in action. Even Moses had no share in that. It was planned, not only creation, but even Yetzias Mitzrayim was planned and executed by the Almighty. Nation was more or less the announcer who brought the good tidings. But the drama was played by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wrote the script, the play, he acted on the stage. And as such, man has to withdraw from society, from work, because by withdrawing from society and by retreating from work, he withdraws from his glory, from power, he returns everything to God. Because Shabbos creation, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, means God's full mastery over the world. Man is helpless. Man cannot do anything in order to accelerate the fulfillment of his destiny, in order to bring about redemption. And sooner, we can do that. However, Hanukkah Purim, very strange. Purim is still a biblical holiday, more or less. Hanukkah is not a biblical holiday at all. I mean, there is no text to Hanukkah. As Chazal say, prophecy disappeared. If only there was just people who were inspired by Ruach HaKodesh.
Yes.
And so, in such a situation, God calls upon men to act. To plan, to take the initiative, and to fulfill, and to realize. I mean, man's role expresses itself in total involvement with the community, in the readiness to sacrifice. This was through Hephaestus, it was through the Hashmonaim. They sacrificed. The next happened later, when the sacrifices were brought. When you know very well, they engaged the so-called Syriacs in battle many times. And if there is a battle, people lose their lives. Well, now we speak about the Nitzchenes, the victories of the Hashmonaim. But before victory is won, there are many sacrifices. And so, when an event in which the community man is involved, then it leads to a different kind of celebration. Not of celebrating the event in loneliness, alone, but on the contrary, in celebrating the event by the individual who merges with the community. Because all together made it possible, the less possible. And the symbol of the day is not prohibition against work. Disengagement, on the contrary. Withdrawal. But the symbol of the day is coming as close as possible to the community. And joining with the community and seeing myself just a part, an integral part of a great community with God, with whom, with which God has concluded the covenant. This is the difference between Yom Kippur, the days of Israel, and Yom Tovim, days of kindness or pleasantness. Okay?